This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire has the oldest housing stock in the country, according to state government. But while these dwellings from a bygone era give our community's New England charm, property owners also need to watch out for lead, a toxic substance sometimes found in older homes. That's because lead paint wasn't banned until 1978. And while it might have been painted over multiple times, it can reappear in the form of chips, flakes, or dust. Lead poisoning is especially dangerous for kids with devastating health effects. So now a new bill in the legislature aims to help children, families, and landlords with enhanced testing and more money for lead abatement. And that's what we're looking at today in The Exchange. So let's hear from you. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have three guests with us. Nick Norman is here. He's a realtor who's long been involved with New Hampshire's Lead Commission. He also directs legislative initiatives for a group of landlords in this state. And Nick Norman, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being
here. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Kate Kirkwood, lead abatement contractor and risk assessor. Kate teaches lots of courses on lead certification to contractors. And Kate, it's good to see you too. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Tom Irwin, Vice President and Director of the Conservation Law Foundation in New Hampshire, which has done a lot of work around this issue. And Tom, welcome back. Good to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you.
So, Tom, just remind us, what makes lead so bad?
Well, Laura, I think you described it really well by describing lead as a toxic substance with devastating health effects. That's exactly what it is. Several years ago, the Centers for Disease Control came to the conclusion that there is no safe level of lead, especially for children in the ages of 0 to 6. That's the time when a lot of brain development is occurring. And that even at low levels of exposure, the harm caused by lead can be permanent and irreversible. And the sort of harm that we see from lead can include loss of IQ, learning disabilities, hearing loss, behavioral problems, and of course, in the worst case scenario, death. And unfortunately, New Hampshire has the distinction of having had the last death caused by lead poisoning in the country. That was in the early 2000s. The effects are permanent and long-term with significant consequences for the child. For the child's family, and of course, there are economic consequences for society at large.
That person isn't as productive as he or she might be. And I think the last time we talked about this, Tom, we had a mom here whose son, I think it was now in his early 20s and was still, struggling with the learning issues and the self-control issues. I mean, this is a lifelong issue.
Exactly. And I think probably one of the most tragic things about this problem is we've known about it for so long. We've banned lead from our gasoline. We've banned lead from paint. That happened in 1978. So we've known about this problem for decades, yet it continues to persist. And there's really only one way to deal with it, and that is to prevent children from being poisoned in the first place. And unfortunately, we have a long way to go in accomplishing that.
Well, and just picking up on what you said, Tom, Kate, I was struck, getting ready for the show yesterday, I thought, Tom's right. 1978, we banned lead paint. We know it's bad. 40 years later, here we are still talking about this. I'm kind of surprised this is still even a problem.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are when we go into the history and start looking at what's been happening in other countries. Europe, for instance, banned lead in the 40s and the 30s and the 40s. And it was kind of funny. I visited my family in Germany last year and trying to tell them in my sort of broken German what I do for a living. They said, "You have lead in the States?
Wow.
You still have lead?" So, yeah, it is a and older homes here in New England, of course, the majority of our housing stock is older homes. And pre-1940 houses, 9 out of 10 of them have lead paint. So we have a lot of work to do.
So it's just that the housing stock is old and it just takes time to get through this.
Yeah. In 1978, they banned the manufacture of lead paint for household use, for residential use. So you could still buy it if you could find it at the hardware stores or whatever. And people still used it into the early 80s, but we stopped manufacturing it just for that use. It's still around for commercial use and has some benefits in some, you know, auto repair and marine use and that sort of thing.
So why do you think we're still dealing with this?
Well, partly because the renovation costs are high, and partly because even though it's covered up, you know, many times people think, well, my house is okay because there's lots of layers of latex paint over that. If there's lead, it's well buried underneath there. But then, you know, we do some renovation. We sand or remove things from the wall, or we cut through it, and now we expose it. And it takes such a tiny amount to make a kid sick. People don't realize it. A good visual is if you took a grain of sugar and split it up into 1,000 pieces, a couple of those pieces that the child breathes in is enough to have an effect.
Wow.
Tiny, tiny bits. So people think, oh, I just have a little bit of lead. Well, a little bit of lead is enough.
I'm really shocked by that. Thank you for the analogy, because I did not understand how small an amount could be dangerous. And Nick, I want to bring you into this too. How much is this a problem for New Hampshire landlords? Are there a lot of properties that you're working with that still have lead paint?
It's a tremendous issue. Landlords don't want to have lead in their properties. Landlords don't want to be having children with elevated levels. Landlords want to take care of it. It's very expensive, just like Kate said. On my home, which is a Victorian, built in 1897, the entry door of that home has a lot of ornate woodwork to it. The paint on that is solid, very intact, in fine condition. And that's lead paint.
Wow.
It was put in 1897.
So you've got lead paint in your house.
Of course. It's an old Victorian. 96% of housing stock in New England is often said to have lead because it's so old and it was built a long time ago. And so you asked, why is it still a problem? So I believe that it's still a problem because the lead paint was so good, it's still here. Mm-hmm. When was it that you saw some latex paint on an exterior that 120 years later is still intact? Usually it gets replaced or repainted or something. The other thing is it's quite expensive to take care of that because even if we took that paint off the door, the lead is in the wood. So the only way to properly, truly handle it is to replace the entire door. So now we're looking at replacing most of a property. So it becomes very expensive.
How have New Hampshire landlords dealt with this issue, especially those in older housing?
So a long time ago, it became very common knowledge that lead paint on old windows was the worst thing that you could have. So landlords for decades, have been slowly replacing and getting rid of all the old windows, putting in modern energy-efficient windows. It used to be said that 90% of the lead elevations were caused by windows. So during renovations, landlords take care of this. After windows, the next most important thing to do would be other friction surfaces, doors, maybe
friction
buildings.
Surfaces means something that gets opened and closed
yep.
a lot.
Yep. After that, the next most important thing would be impact surfaces, doors that bang and so forth. And after that, probably chewable surfaces. So over the years, landlords have been, as they renovate, making conscious efforts to get rid of more and more lead. But it's too expensive to do it all at once.
So you do it piece by piece.
Yeah.
And then there may be some issues that arise.
And then if the landlord is really knowledgeable.
From waiting.
Yes. And then if a landlord is really knowledgeable, what they do is they keep it lead safe in the meantime by keeping the lead properly covered with new paint, intact, not chipping. So on.
Maybe we can get Kate to explain some of that to us in just a moment. I want to invite our listeners to join us as well. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking once again at lead paint and lead poisoning. A Senate bill aims to prevent lead poisoning in children by strengthening lead testing and placing stricter requirements on properties containing lead paint. We're going to look at the impact on landlords, on homeowners, on families, and the availability of housing here in the Granite State. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Your questions, comments, concerns, observations, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Tom, before we get into some of the details, just broadly, talking about how New Hampshire has handled this problem that we've known about for a long time, you've written that New Hampshire in general has been more reactive than proactive. What do you mean?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the best way to address the problem of lead poisoning is to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Because it's not curable.
Exactly. So the system we have in New Hampshire is basically set up in terms of the regulatory approach that's implemented by the Department of Health and Human Services. It's set up to essentially require a child to be poisoned first before the state can go in and assess the situation, what the exposures might be. So if I were to contrast that with Massachusetts, for example, in Massachusetts, if you are a property owner and you're renting your property, you cannot rent that property unless you have made it lead safe. That is not the case in New Hampshire. So in New Hampshire, that standard does not exist. A child can come in to a rental unit, be poisoned. And an important point here is not just be poisoned, but a child has to be poisoned up to a level of 10 micrograms per deciliter blood lead level.
That's the level.
To trigger action by the state. The CDC has said we really ought to be starting at least at the level of 5 micrograms per deciliter. So we're not only waiting for kids to become poisoned first, allowing kids to essentially be the sensors of whether there's a lead problem. We're requiring them to be poisoned to a level twice as high as what the CDC recommends before the Department of Health and Human Services can come in, assess the situation, determine whether, in fact, there are lead hazards that need to be remediated.
And in the Senate bill that we're going to look at, the original proposal was 4 or 5, but then in compromise, that got pushed back up to 10. Is that correct, Tom?
That's correct.
So let's talk about this, because there's a lot to sort of untangle here. And Kate, that sounds kind of creepy, making children be the canary in the coal mine. I wonder what you think.
Yeah, I'd like to add something to that, too, which is a devastating piece of this. We don't test our children. You know, people think, oh, well, they must get tested when they go to school or when they're at the doctor's office for all those many visits when they're toddlers. But the truth of the matter is we have no requirement that New Hampshire tests their children.
No mandatory testing.
That's right. So, as you know, NPR did an article or a broadcast a year or two ago now where they compared the testing rates in New Hampshire to the other states. And we found that, for instance, in Massachusetts and Maine test 76-74% of their kids. Vermont actually tests 82% of their kids. And here in New Hampshire, we test 16%.
Now, this bill does include a requirement for universal testing of little kids.
Age 1 and age 2, which is really exactly the time we want to be testing. The highest risk for these kids is when they start getting around, but they're not really verbal yet. So we can't even tell whether something's hurting them, whether there's some point, you know, at which we might identify a symptom, but they're getting into the lead dust, bits of those little tiny bits of dust on the floor, and they're breathing it and eating it. You know, they have this hand-to-mouth behavior, so they're crawling around and putting their hands in their mouths and continually, ingesting this stuff. And so these kids are getting high levels of lead, and we don't even know because we're not testing. So to me, the really important piece of all of this is we just have to test the kids, and then we'll know. We'll have a benchmark to work with, and we'll know how many kids and how bad this problem really is.
And that seems to be an area where most people are agreeing that this just require the testing.
I hope so.
What do you think about this approach, Nick, Tom described, the idea of waiting for kids to get sick before abatement is required, and also this higher level of, pardon me, Tom, I don't remember the exact measurement, 10
micrograms,
thank you, per deciliter. Yeah, go ahead.
So there's a lot to cover in
here.
So there are many things that are being done proactive before children are being poisoned, or elevated levels. In New Hampshire, when a child measures 10 micrograms per deciliter or higher, there is a process that starts kicking in, which eventually, most often, ends up in a lead abatement order on the property. When that happens, very likely all units in that property are required to be abated. So you may have had one child with an elevation in a six family, but the other six units end up being abated. So we are proactive in that way.
So even if there's no problem in the other five apartments, you abate all of those other apartments just in case.
Right. And landlords have been proactive for decades at removing lead from their buildings. From 1999 to 2015, we've had a 91% drop in the amount of elevations in children 10 and above, largely because landlords are doing that work of eliminating lead, partly because consumers and tenants are becoming more educated about lead, but mostly it's the landlords removing it. In New Hampshire, there are three programs that get grant money from HUD. It's not nearly as much as we need, but it is something. Nashua, Manchester each get a grant of about $3 million every 3 years. The state of New Hampshire gets a grant of about $3 million every 3 years. And that work is also proactively, in many cases, landlords going in, using that money to remediate lead in their properties. I did it on one of my buildings.
So there's some government money, state or federal,
there's some. It's
to
way,
assist
way,
with the big
not
costs.
Enough. We estimated on the previous lead commission that it would cost close to $4 billion to abate New Hampshire's housing stock.
$4 billion if you were to just get rid of this problem altogether.
And it doesn't get rid of the problem altogether. Abatement, unfortunately, doesn't remove the lead necessarily. Abatement covers the lead in some kind of a permanent way. And that permanent way is said to be good for 20 years. So with the amount of money that we're using, it would take about 1,000 years to accomplish a 20-year solution.
Sounds like, based on the health risks that Tom described, Nick, that we need to move more quickly than that.
We need more money. There's no question about it. Lead is a money issue.
Do you want to jump in real quick, Tom? And I've got some emails I want to share.
One thing I was going to add is that there are common sense approaches to addressing the problem of lead. And one of those approaches is to ensure ongoing proper maintenance of painted surfaces. There is a good common sense program that's been working in Vermont that the Lead Commission explored for purposes of developing a model in New Hampshire that would outline annual inspection and maintenance practices for landlords to prevent the problem of deferred maintenance, because that's what leads to the problem.
So even if you're not going to rip everything out, there are things that you can do in the interim.
Yes, and I don't think anyone is advocating that we get rid of every painted surface that contains lead paint. That's just not feasible. But there are common sense approaches to dealing with this, and with the health of our kids at risk, we think it's essential that we do that.
Well, here's an email from Megan in Franklin that just came in. She says, I never realized just how little lead exposure could lead to devastating health problems in a child. I just bought a 100-year-old home that has lead paint, and I have a toddler. What are some immediate actions I can take to protect my daughter? Megan says, I'm suddenly freaking out and feeling incredibly guilty for loving old homes and buying an old home. And Megan, I've got an old one too, so I understand. Real quick, Kate, go ahead.
Yeah, the really important piece is to have an inspection done. You can have everything from a sort of a spot check that's done by these little devices you can buy at Home Depot to a full risk assessment. It just depends on your finances and the situation at the house. But definitely have an inspection so you know where that lead is.
Have an inspection, and then you know what your standing is, and then you can kind of go from there. Don't freak out, Megan.
Exactly.
And maybe after a short break we can give her some other online resources where she can look. So thanks for the email, Megan. After a break, we'll take your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
Whether you're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire tackles lead poisoning again through a new Senate bill. Is it too tough or not tough enough? The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Tom Irwin's here, Vice President and Director of the Conservation Law Foundation in New Hampshire, which has done a lot of work around New England on this issue. Kate Kirkwood is with us. She's a lead abatement contractor and risk assessor. And Nick Norman, he's a realtor who's long been involved with New Hampshire's Lead Commission, including with landlords in the state. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And just before the break, we read an email from Megan who said she's got a toddler. Kate, she's got an old home. She's freaking out. What actions can she take to protect her daughter, she says?
One more thing absolutely essential is to get her daughter tested. You know, it's a simple little blood test. The first one is a finger stick. You can do it and have results immediately. She should contact her doctor and say, can I get a lead test for my child right away? A capillary test, they call it, or a quick test. She'd have results immediately. Barring that, a venous draw, you know, traditional blood test, she'll have results in a couple of days. And that will let her know that the child is hopefully not contaminated at this point. And she's welcome to call me. I'm happy to talk further. There are lots of little things she can do to keep the child safe. Lots of behavioral stuff. Wash her hands all the time. Keep her away from any chipping, peeling, flaking paint. And very simple, as Tom says, common sense approaches would be to just paint anything which is chipping, peeling currently. Just paint it over with anything, any latex paint. What you're trying to do is seal in the paint so we don't get those little tiny bits of dust.
Where do you think, Nick, the lack of understanding is greater among people who live in apartments or people who live in homes like Megan?
Well, I would say that's equal. I see constantly people coming to view our apartments that have young children and are totally ignorant about lead. And I'll often spend some time educating them because they don't know anything about lead. It's a huge issue. We need to have much, much more education to tenants and to property owners. And I think that one of the reasons that we don't have that is there's this common thing, just like you exemplified earlier, which is a mindset that says, gee, I thought lead was handled a long time ago.
Right.
So if you look at the data of how many children have elevated levels of 10 or above, it's about 0.4% of the children that are tested. So it's actually a quite small number as a percentage. That's not to say that no child, any child being harmed is okay.
Because the consequences are tragic.
But what this is such a small number that it doesn't happen to a lot of people. So the people that does happen to, like Megan's, oh my God, I'm freaking out. But a lot of people don't have it on their radar.
What about, it's interesting, we've been asking you questions about landlords and apartments, but you're also a realtor, Nick. What about realtors? Are they required to tell a prospective buyer, you know, Megan and Franklin, this 100-year-old home has lead, might have lead, you should get a lead test?
So
what's the requirement there?
In the United States, as a federal law, any property being sold or rented gets a lead paint disclosure form. So the tenant or the buyer gets a form that warns them about lead. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't know about the lead in their property.
I don't think I know about the lead in my property.
Many people just don't know. And on the disclosure forms, there's a place to say, you know, I don't know anything about lead. I don't have any results. Anything that you do know should be disclosed. That's the federal law. We also encourage anyone buying property to call the Department of Health and Human Services and just ask them, has there been a lead order on this property? Or is there one active? Because they will tell you. And that's something that a lot of people don't know about either.
Well, Megan, I hope this was helpful. Good luck to you. And let's take some calls, all of you. Maureen's in Epping. Hi, Maureen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead, Maureen.
I heard the lady that called in or was talking earlier with the email about the old house with the lead paint. I put a mudroom on my house, which is an old house, about 10 years ago. And it's a big mudroom. And I had the whole house inspected for lead. and the mudroom had lead in it because the moldings, which were bought from a local home improvement store, had been pre-painted and they were shipped in from overseas, and they all contain lead.
Everybody in the studio is shaking their head. Maureen, so what did you end up doing?
Well, the expert that I had in said that my children were no longer little. I could replace the moldings or the content, you know, and they were sealed. He said I could seal them with another paint because they weren't chipping and flaking. So we repainted over them. And I think that I'm hoping, because this is what I was told, that that would keep the lead contained and not, it's not at a level that would affect us.
You know, two questions. Maureen, thank you so much for calling. One, Tom, she said her kids are older. Is lead paint or lead dust from that paint a problem for older children?
It's actually a problem for everyone.
Even adults?
Even adults. There are harmful health effects of lead for everyone. But it is kids in that 0 to 6 age range when brain development is underway that are particularly vulnerable.
Okay. And do you want to jump in too, Kate, maybe on the idea that she bought these things and they had lead paint?
Yes, but I'd also like to talk about the exposure for older folks. I work with lead abatement contractors, and there is an OSHA regulation that these contractors have to have their blood tested for lead.
Right.
And in fact, if they are over a certain level, they're pulled off the job site and cannot work around the lead dust until they lower that level. So I work with a lot of lead-poisoned adults and older kids as well. The reason we worry about kids under 6 so much is that their brains are in development. And once we get past 6, believe it or not, our brains are done developing. It's kind of sad. but there is still a lot of symptoms. There are a lot of hazards for older folks. For example, with adults, one of the things we see is headaches, migraines, and that sort of thing, joint pain, digestive problems, stomach disorders, memory loss. And there's a component to the reproductive system I should mention, too. Lead affects for young guys, sperm. It's abnormal and reduced sperm count. So there's good research out there that if a young couple's trying to get pregnant and he works around lead, she's more likely to miscarry. Pregnant women are also at high risk because, of course, anything they take in, the baby, you know, passes through to the fetus.
Sure.
So a mom who's maybe scraping and painting a nursery, for example, while she's pregnant and not using a respirator is perhaps endangering herself as well as the child.
So Maureen said she bought new, I think she said, moldings for this mudroom that she made. Came in, Nick, from somewhere else.
China, probably.
And they had lead in them.
Yeah, it's a common problem. Anyone buying antiques or any old components, building components, should be really suspect of lead. And she asked about, she painted over it. She hopes that that's okay.
Sure.
That's
that hold
a
things
good,
down.
That's a good interim measure, but it's only an interim measure. Once that modern, let's say it's latex paint covering the lead, starts to flake off, which you know it will in a few years, it can pull off with it pieces of the old lead that's there. And as I said before, even if you took all of the lead off that component, the wood itself has lead in it.
Right, like you said earlier.
So the only good method is to completely remove that component.
Well, Maureen, good luck to you. I hope this helped. And Chris is next in Nashua. Hi, Chris. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
So my question for you is, you know, as the gentleman had said, you know, this is really a money issue. I'm curious if an ethical landlord basically wanted to be completely in compliance and just literally get all the lead out of a typical apartment, if there is such a thing, what are the most common approaches that they use and what's the cost for that? You know, big round numbers, I think, is all we can get here. Just trying to get an idea of what the options are. And also, what kind of options are there from the state to maybe do loans or grants or anything like that?
No, it's a great question, Chris. Thank you. And go ahead, Nick, you first.
So there is an average that a lot of people use around the country in what we think of as the lead world, people interested in lead, that says an abatement will cost on average about $10,000 per unit. Now, that's just a wild ballpark. It can cost $70,000, and it can cost $1,000. So It depends on how much exterior work needs to be done. There's many, many variables. Do you have to replace all the windows or half the windows already replaced? So it's all over the board. But if you averaged it out, it probably would be in the range of around $10,000. So let's say a four family, it wouldn't be unheard of for a four family to cost maybe $50,000. And again, the price can be all over the place. I had a six unit that was bid to do abatement work that was $106,000. So it can go all over the place. In terms of what to do, the priorities really should be replace the old windows first because they have the worst friction surfaces. Replace the other friction surfaces around the apartment, including if you have floors. That's a friction surface.
Right, because people are walking on it all
right,
the time.
Right, and the floor, of course, is the lowest point. That's where the dust is going to collect. After that, you would want to address impact surfaces that are disturbing the paint. After that, you'd want to address what's called chewable surfaces, something a young child could get their mouth on and chew. So you take it in priorities as you can afford it. In terms of grant monies, I said before the city of Nashua has a $3 million grant approximately. Manchester has a $3 million grant approximately. And the state of New Hampshire has a $3 million grant approximately. Those programs come with strings attached that sometimes make it impossible for a landlord to use it. In many cases, a landlord can. And we're hoping that in this new lead bill, we get another $3 million fund that will be state fund that will have a lot more availability to many landlords without the strings.
Nick, what happens if you can't afford it? You know, you said take these measures, do the abatement if you can afford it.
The interim measures are really worthwhile.
The paintovers.
Yeah, Tom mentioned that earlier. That's a really good, smart technique for landlords to use. So keep it safe in the interim by keeping the lead paint covered. And then as you can afford it, maybe each time you have a tenant turnover, you can look through and say, what's my budget? I can afford to replace one window, one door. Until over the years, you've slowly gotten the lead out on a budget you can afford.
Kate?
I just want to say, Chris, you in Nashua, you're fortunate that you have a grant program and it's ongoing right now and they have funds. So you would contact the Department of Urban Planning or Urban Programs, I'm sorry, at Nashua City Hall. And these grant programs, they are grants, they're not loans, and they give you roughly that number. Nick did a great job of explaining the concept of the how much per unit you'll need, and they give you right around that number. So if you can qualify, that would be a great option for Manchester, Nashua, and most of the state.
So speaking of property owners, all of you, with us now is Jack Rodolico, our colleague here at NHPR. He's our science and health reporter. He's covered this lead issue a lot in the past, most recently the lead-related problems of a major developer in the state. And Jack, thank you for taking time out.
Yeah, good to be here.
So Brady Sullivan, a big name, probably a familiar name to many listeners. Who is this company?
Yeah, and I think actually they might be unfamiliar to a lot of folks, even though they're very prominent throughout the state. So if you drive through Manchester, several of the tallest buildings in Manchester are owned by Brady Sullivan. A couple of the most prominent mills are owned by Brady Sullivan. And they're one of the biggest property owners and developers in the state. They have this really kind of complex portfolio of brand new housing subdivisions in places like Lebanon and Laconia. They've got mills that are converted into commercial space in Keene and apartments in Manchester. And they've also moved into the rental market in Massachusetts and Rhode Island by buying old mills and big old abandoned mills and converting them into rental apartments.
Which is what people want, right?
People
want
that.
These buildings used.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're just sitting there.
Yeah. And it's sort of a young up-and-coming thing, right? For people with money, you've got these like beautiful apartments with exposed brick and exposed beams, all these modern amenities. They're cool apartments.
So the company recently paid a $90,000 fine over lead exposure to tenants in Manchester.
Right.
Jack, what was that about? What was the building or buildings in question?
So that's one of these big old mills, right? So as everyone's discussing here, when you have an old building, you've got lead. Actually, these old mills have way more toxins than just lead. It's asbestos, it's volatile organic compounds, all kinds of stuff. But the particular issue here was lead. did. And in this one building, Mill West, they hired a contractor to do a bunch of sandblasting work. And that contractor was doing work below apartments where tenants were living. And what we now know is that that contractor didn't have the proper city permits. They didn't have the proper federal training. What they did wrong was basically everything as far as the EPA was concerned, OSHA was concerned. I mean, it was a pretty serious problem. And they sandblasted a cloud of lead dust that essentially enveloped this massive mill. That's the way the tenants described it, was this cloud. And so, you know, fast forward 2 years later, the things that have unfolded are essentially that the tenants initially claimed that Brady Sullivan was suppressing information about that problem while people were actively trying to figure out if there were lead contamination in their apartments. Some of these apartments had lead dust. I mean, I looked at the windowsills, just a quarter inch of lead dust in the windowsills in their apartments. So there have been multiple layers of renovation and cleaning, and the EPA came in and said, actually, you've broke two federal lead paint laws. You didn't sandblast properly, and that goes for the landlord, Brady Sullivan, and the contractor. And when they looked at the lease agreements, someone mentioned earlier on this panel that when you move into an apartment or a home, the landlord has to tell you what they know about lead. Well, the EPA reviewed those lease agreements, and they found that their feeling was that essentially those did not accurately represent what Brady Sullivan knew about lead. Brady Sullivan has denied that, but they've also paid fines.
So that contractor would not have passed muster with Kate Kirkwood,
who
does risk assessment, who teaches certification and so forth. So what happened in the end, Jack?
It's not over yet. So there's
That's a lot of lead, by the way. I mean, Kate described earlier, it's, you know, break down a grain of sugar and that's how much is toxic. You're talking a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, this was lead levels at hundreds or thousands. I can't even remember the number now, but huge numbers higher. So
people were tested.
People were tested. And okay, so there's a couple legs to this, right? So there's an ongoing, effectively a class action lawsuit. About 40 of the apartments are suing their landlord. And that's moving forward. There's a trial date set for the end of this year. Brady Sullivan has had a number of lawsuits like this. They've all settled out of court before trial. So we'll see what happens this year. But the tenants say, you know, they're sort of emboldened by the EPA evidence saying, yeah, well, you broke federal law. The tenants think that's kind of a good thing, although they're kind of unimpressed with the fine that their landlord has gotten. If you ask Brady Sullivan, they've apologized, but they haven't taken blame. They've blamed the contractor. If you ask the tenants, they blame both the contractor and Brady Sullivan. And they say the jury's out on whether people have lead toxicity. They've got kids in that building who were in that precious age, right, of 0 to 6. And so now they're 2 years older. They're going to school. It's not entirely clear yet what the long-term effects could be for people in that building. Hopefully it's nothing, right? But the tenants don't feel like they've got that. Like they feel that they're still on shaky ground, and most of those folks have moved out. By the way,
well, that's what I was going to say. I'm assuming they've moved out. I'm assuming they've gotten themselves and their kids tested. Do you know, Jack?
I mean, I certainly haven't talked to all 40. I know of people who've gotten tested. I know of adults who've gotten tested who said their blood levels are elevated, but they didn't get a baseline test before that necessarily. And this is where some of the ambiguity comes
tricky.
In.
Sure.
If you want to sue a landlord, is how do you prove that you've got lead that is a direct result of that building? How do you prove that problems in school are related to lead exposure that you had in that building? So we'll see where the case goes. I mean, it's really too early to tell. It may just settle. Or may go to trial.
Well, Jack, thank you so much.
Absolutely, really appreciate it.
That's Jack Rodolico, again, NHPR's health and science reporter. After a short break, we'll talk more, and we'll take a lot more of your emails, questions, comments. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Keep it right here.
Whether you're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at lead poisoning and some of the aspects of a new Senate bill that aims to prevent lead poisoning, especially in children, by strengthening lead testing and placing stricter requirements on properties containing lead paint. Today, we're looking at how this will affect families, children, housing, landlords, realtors. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Tom Irwin, Kate Kirkwood, Nick Norman, before I go back to our listeners, very interesting to hear from Jack Rodolico just a moment ago. Tom, I'll turn to you first on that big case concerning a big property owner and developer here in New Hampshire, Brady Sullivan. I just wonder what your thoughts were on some of the issues that Jack says this case raises.
Well, I think the most important takeaway is that this was a sophisticated business property owner that should have known and didn't. And the sort of problems that Jack described were particularly egregious. It's not common for contractors to go in with sandblasters. And so what I want to emphasize is the fact that there are contractors every day in homes across New Hampshire engaging in unsafe practices, disturbing lead. There is a federal program called the Renovation, Repair, and Painting Program. Kate is a trainer in that program. These are requirements for lead-safe practices that all painting contractors and remodelers, electricians are supposed to comply with. Unfortunately, there is a low level of compliance. There are many contractors who don't know about the program or perhaps are turning a blind eye to it. So every
day, because it's a pain and you have to take the certification and you have to pay for it and so on and so forth.
Right. So, you know, if you take a scraper to, a molding or a siding, that creates an exposure for kids and adults who live in that unit or that home. So this is happening every day. So the Brady Sullivan issue is high profile, especially egregious, but this is a problem that is leading to poisonings throughout the state. In fact, the state's last data for 2015 showed 660 cases of lead poisoning, 660 kids that year who were lead poisoned.
And those are the only ones who were tested, because we're not doing a very good job testing, as Kate said.
Exactly. So the numbers are likely higher, and a third of those, it's believed, a third of those cases of poisoning were associated with unsafe renovation practices.
I'm actually shocked by the Brady Sullivan story too, Kate, and I wasn't joking when I said that I'm sure that contract would not pass muster with you. I'm struck because this is a big company. This isn't, you know, Joe or Jane contractor who's just trying to make some money on the side. I mean, this is a big company that should have known better.
The problem really is awareness. I can't tell you how often I have people in class who, just found out about this. And they are professional contractors, or maybe not. Maybe they're do-it-yourselfers at home or a small landlord. But the way the law is written, anyone who disturbs paint, any paint, in a house built before 1978 is required to have this one-day training. And it's not bad. I mean, it's a $200 investment. You get certified for 5 years. It's an eight-hour training. And you learn an incredible amount. I can't tell you how often I have people come to the class with one attitude and leave with a completely different attitude.
Well, what's the attitude when they come in?
It's often very negative. I can't believe I have to spend a whole day learning about lead. I've been replacing windows my whole life. I don't need you to tell me about lead. But they don't know. They don't know all of the risks for the kids and for themselves. And also, we talk a lot about replacing windows, but I want to just mention, don't forget the trim. Many times we go into houses and the window itself, the sash has been replaced, but the sill and the apron and the casings and all those pieces that are still inside the house contain a lot of lead as well. And as Nick said, it does get into the wood, but we're much more concerned about what's bioavailable is the term we use. That is, the kid could breathe it or the kid could eat it. If it's embedded in the wood, that's pretty well safe. You know, they can't get at that, but they sure can get at the old chipping, peeling paint that's there.
Well, I've got a ton of questions from our listeners, so let me share a couple of these with you. Here's Kermit, who says, very good topic. I think there should be consequences for landlords who knowingly rent their apartments to children under the age of 6 that they know contain lead. Kermit asks, are other requirements of contractors to be lead certified in order to renovate these homes that contain lead paint. He says, I know in Massachusetts there's a certification process. Kermit, thank you for the question. And Nick, the first part first, please. Are there consequences for landlords who knowingly rent to children when they know that there is lead?
The federal disclosures require that any knowledge of lead is told to a tenant on the lead disclosure form. As we move to the future, more and more is known about lead because of the RRP rule that Tom mentioned. More people are following that rule. More people are discovering if there is lead or there is not lead because it affects how they do their renovation. If there is lead, they need to follow the lead safe practices of the RRP rule. If there is no lead, they can use the renovation methods they've always used. I highly, highly encourage every landlord of New Hampshire and across the entire country to take the RRP course themselves, even if they don't touch the property, because a long time ago I figured if I'm hiring a contractor, it's not going to stop at the contractor. Someone's going to come back to me. So I want to know that my contractor is doing the correct work.
So you're encouraging people to do that. Kermit asks, are there requirements of contractors to be lead certified?
There are requirements of all, just like Kate said, anybody, contractors or property owners, anybody that is disturbing lead paint, and they're doing it for compensation, as in receiving rent,
so
or they're
a
contractor,
yeah,
or they're even doing it for a charity and the charity bought them a cup of coffee. If there's any compensation at all, then they're required to use these lead-safe practices. And the fines for not using the lead-safe practices can be very, very steep. The rule actually says $37,500 per violation.
So they have to use the practices. Are they required, as Kermit asks, to be certified in those practices?
Anyone disturbing lead paint for compensation is required to be certified in the practices of lead-safe
renovation. That's that one-day class I was just mentioning.
The one day. Mm-hmm. So how is it possible, what you said, Tom, where violations are happening all the time every day?
Because a lot of contractors are not getting certified, aren't being trained, and therefore are not using lead-safe practices in the field.
And so they just, people aren't asking them about it? You know, they're hiring them without saying, by the way, are you lead certified? Is that where the gap is? Or?
Well, I think the responsibility really lies with the contractor. But I think as consumers, we all can play a role. And certainly, you know, if you own a home or an apartment building that is pre-1978 and you're hiring a contractor, that absolutely should be part of the conversation to confirm that that person is properly trained and certified.
Let's take another call. This is Nikki in Dublin. Hi, Nikki. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. Go ahead.
I love your show, First Time Caller.
Good.
And this is a great topic. When my youngest son was born, it was 1993. So I think that you talked about that maybe they changed the law in 1999, but we lived in an old apartment building in Peterborough, and when we moved in, there was nothing said to us about lead. We didn't know anything about it. We had two older children that were not of crawling age at that point, but I went through my pregnancy in that apartment, vacuuming the floors and cleaning the windows and all that stuff, so I was breathing it in. And then when my son was born, at first, everything seemed normal, but then when he got to be like crawling age, he started developing some unusual behaviors, one of which was he would sit on the floor and bang his head against the wall. So we took him to the doctor and talked to him, you know, what is going on, and it was at that point that they tested his lead levels, and the first test came back as 12, which is way above.
That's high.
That's
yeah.
High. And the second test came back as 15.
Oh, Nikki, I'm so sorry.
And
so how's he doing today?
He's 23 now.
Yeah.
He has had life problems all throughout his entire life, throughout school. He has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, psychosis, schizoaffective disorder, When he was 18, he committed arson.
Oh, my goodness.
He spent time in jail, and now he lives with my ex-husband, and he doesn't do much. He just looks on the computer and apparently is very into Japanese and Chinese history.
Nikki, what a testimonial. And if anybody needs to be convinced that lead is harmful, here's Nikki's son. And my goodness, I'm so sorry, Nikki. And I really appreciate you sharing the story. Quick comments from you first, maybe, Kate. And then I've got a ton of emails.
I just want to say that this is exactly the situation we see frequently with lead poisoning.
It's
because
so sad.
It's a neurotoxin. You know, it affects the brain. And once that happens, all of these kinds of things, you know, ADHD and autism and all these kinds of things come into play. I'm so sorry, Nikki. This is very typical of a lead poisoned child.
Do you want to jump in, Nick?
I just wanted to say that Nikki's story highlights for us what we said earlier, is that we need boatloads of more education for both landlords and tenants. Tenants need to know that the effects of lead are as they are, and they need to learn how to live safely in a leaded apartment. And my preference would be they don't rent a leaded apartment with a young child.
Well, and speaking of education for tenants and homeowners, now here is an email from someone who was a landlord in Vermont who's got another perspective, and it's a little bit long, but I'm going to go through it. This is from Christopher in Vermont. He says, in 2000, a two-year-old tenant in an apartment house I owned in Springfield, which was over 200 years old, was diagnosed with a dangerously high lead level. The state of Vermont ordered his residential unit be lead abated, and I, as the owner, asked that the entire building be lead abated. During the work, which cost $28,000, I was not allowed to enter the building. Eventually, Christopher says, it was considered complete, and the tenants were allowed to return from the motels where I was housing them at my expense. A month later, Christopher says, the contaminated child went for a medical appointment and was found to have twice the lead count he'd had before. Yikes. Chris says, I alerted the state and informed them that the child's poisoning was their responsibility since they had certified the building as lead abated. Four inspectors showed up and upon entering the child's apartment, found his father was refinishing antique furniture in the kitchen and was using an orbital sander to remove the old paint. The red paint dust covered all the surfaces in the kitchen and had spread to the other rooms. Christopher says, my point is simple. Many times the use of common sense by tenants would prevent poisoning of their children, and education of both property owners and occupants of older buildings is vital to protecting children. Christopher, thank you so much. This is a very important point. I can see everybody wants to jump in. Kate, I'm going to go ahead.
I was just going to say thank you. You're absolutely right. It just comes right back down to awareness. Everyone needs to be more aware. The more we can speak to groups, the more we can have these kinds of broadcasts, the more people will know.
Well, and somebody called in and couldn't stay on the line. And Tom, I'll ask you this. This person wanted to know lots of news about cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency. The latest I saw was a 31% cut at EPA. Both of our guests, Nick and Kate, have talked about these EPA programs that, you know, stay on top of this. Will those be at risk? This person wanted to know.
They may be. The unfortunate reality is even before those cuts, this program, the renovation, repair, and painting program at EPA, is severely underfunded, understaffed. They have one or two inspectors for the entire New England region. So the reality is the renovation, repair, and painting program is, for the most part, not being enforced. That's contributing to the lack of compliance among a lot of contractors. And one of the things we had hoped to do in the legislation that's now moving through the legislative process was to...
This is here in New Hampshire.
Here in New Hampshire, was to improve compliance with RRP, renovation, repair, and painting, in part by allowing the state to play a larger role in that program rather than relying on the one or two inspectors who were down in Boston.
So one or two inspectors for all six New England states, very old housing stock. So you're saying, Tom, that's not enough, but maybe at the state level we can get more people?
Correct.
Keeping an eye on this. Couple more emails that I'd love to share with all of you, people who just have very practical questions about their own homes. Here's Jessica in Rochester. My son is 14 months old. At his 12-month checkup, he tested 4 on the lead level. My first son had no lead when tested. The main difference is my second son is being watched in a renovated older building. We purchased a Home Depot test, both water and surface. Both tests came back negative for lead. How reliable are those results? How do we determine where the lead is coming from? What should be my next steps? Another concerned mom. And Jessica, I'm so glad that you emailed. And Nick, a couple questions here. First of all, seems like her place is fine. She used the Home Depot test. She's wondering how reliable those are.
So when you take the RRP training course, I teach that as well. Part of the course is to teach someone how to use that test kit properly. So if you're not using it properly, you can get a false reading. And it's not rocket science. It's simply that in the old days, we had lead paint on a surface. It's been painted over and painted over and painted over. So if you're going to test for the lead, you need to get under the present levels of paint and down to where the lead is.
But do you really want to do that? You might disturb it and create dust.
Well, you're going to do that in a lead-safe way. So the RRP rule talks about how to do renovations lead-safe. And again, there's no rocket science in this. It's simple, common thought. For instance, if you're going to scrape something, like I just described, you wet it down with a moist spray. So you're creating less dust. You put some plastic down so you capture any debris that comes off. But the point is to get to the lead and test the lead that's there. Maybe there is lead there. I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't know how she tested. But this test kit is very reliable.
The Home Depot type test kits.
It's physics. It's two compounds, a liquid and a powder. You mix them together, and it's just chemistry. If that compound touches lead, it turns red. It's physics. So how can that fail, right? But the failure can be that the person didn't get the proper test.
Well, the other thing is she says her son is being watched, so in daycare at a renovated older building. So she asks, Kate, what should my next steps be? It sounds like see if you can get the daycare place tested.
Yeah, and there are actually only two brands that EPA has recognized on those test kits. You want one called LeadCheck or DLead. Those are the only two brands that I could speak to as being reliable.
All right, well, lots more comments that we didn't get to, folks. We'll put them on our Facebook page and on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. All of you are going to have to come back. Thank you very much
Please.
For being here. Tom, good to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you, Laura.
Tom Irwin, Vice President and Director of the Conservation Law Foundation in New Hampshire. Kate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kate Kirkwood, lead abatement contractor and risk assessor. She teaches lead certification courses to contractors. And Nick Norman, really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Nick Norman, realtor who's long been involved with New Hampshire's Lead Commission. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Ellen Grimm is our senior producer. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips with volunteer Priscilla Malcolm. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.